This is Second Look, only on 103.3 WZND. Here to take a second look at the stories the WZND Newsroom has covered this week. Investigative reporting from the award-winning WZND News Team, here for you. Unbiased, engaging, and comprehensive. Second Look starts now.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Second Look, the show where we take an in-depth second look at last week's stories. I'm Jaden Cohn.
And I'm Joey Delahunty. Today, we will be discussing ISU's recent Gamma Phi Circus, the World War II veteran whose remains have just been returned to Bloomington, and catching up with the Bloomington Bison.
ISU's Gamma Phi Circus was back in action this weekend, with over 100 students putting on a high-flying event for crowds of people to enjoy. This was their 96th year of the performance, making them the oldest collegiate college in the nation. WZND's Bella Morello sat down with programming director Rainey Themer-Brothsquid to learn more about the show this year.
You just want to start out with, you know, for people that might be attending that have never gone before, it's their first time, what can they expect?
Sure. Well, you can expect a whole lot of fun, a lot of things you never would have envisioned as possible. Our students put together a full-length professional-level performance that has everything from ground acts to aerial acts. They make their own costumes. They make their own props. So it's a really big spectacle and is a lot of fun.
Okay, perfect. And could you speak a little bit about the different acts that will be in store for this weekend and kind of overall like an overview of what it will look like?
Sure. So every year we have a different theme for our show, and this year's theme is titled A Journey Through the Fine Arts. And so every single act that we have takes inspiration from a different type of art form or from an artist like Frida Kahlo or Leonardo da Vinci. And so each act is themed around different artists or art forms. So we have everything from German wheel, which is, I like to describe it like a giant hamster wheel. We have high wire, we have juggling, we have acrobatics, tumbling. There will also be a handful of different aerials. We do keep those a little secret because we change them out every year and we want you to come to the show and see them. But yeah, so it'll be a lot of action and a lot of high-level skill.
Can you share with us the history of Gamma Phi Circus and how it began?
Absolutely. So Gamma Phi Circus was started in 1929 by Clifford Horton, and Gamma Phi members affectionately call him Pop, P-O-P. And he was the head of the men's physical education department. He eventually went on to the athletics department, and he had been a member of a Gamma Phi in a different university and wanted to bring that here to ISU. And so it started off in 1929 as a gymnastics fraternity, which was only open to men at the time, and so the first class only had 22 members, plus they had three like honorary faculty members. And then to give you like an idea of the difference, we have 156 members now. So we have grown significantly. So Gamma Phi started off as a gymnastics fraternity. So they did tumbling, they did pyramids, they did gymnastics, the parallel bars, the uneven bars, that sort of thing. And then in 1932, we had our first ever circus. And that was held in Old McCormick Gymnasium. And so that was held in March of 1932, and it was made up of 11 different acts, and Gamma Phi did 5 of them because they weren't large enough to do their own performance, so they invited community members to come in and perform. And then I believe it was in 1950s, 60s, where we became large enough to support our own full-length circus and have been doing that ever since.
Okay, yeah. And then what role has the Gamma Phi Circus played in the local community and the university over the years?
Sure. So one thing that is really unique about Illinois State University is we are one of two collegiate circuses in the United States, and we are the oldest collegiate circus. So this is an incredibly unique tradition that Illinois State has, and it provides us with the opportunity for ISU students to develop physically and mentally through the practice of circus arts. So every year we have our big home show in April, but we also do events in the community. We are the main feature of the Sweet Corn Circus Festival that's held in Uptown Normal every August, and that is a festival that celebrates the town's agricultural and circus roots, because Bloomington Normal has a super rich circus history dating back to the 1970s, and we were like the trapeze capital of the world from the 1870s to the 1950s. And so we collaborate a lot with the community is what I'm trying to say. We also have summer camps that local kids come and do our summer camp, circus skill summer camps, in June and July every year. So one of the things that I also think is really cool about what our program does is that we provide our members with a lot of leadership experience. So we are technically an RSO. So we have a student leadership board. We have 6 student leaders who help run the direction of the circus and run the organization. And then we also have act captains who help create and guide and teach the act that they are assigned to, so they teach the other members. We also have committee heads who guide different committees. So we have a costumes committee, we have a props committee, we have a publicity committee. So our students have a hand in pretty much all aspects of what goes into making our circus run.
You were talking a little bit about how it's kind of evolved over the years, started off as just gymnastics fraternity, then kind of turned into that circus. Can you maybe talk a little bit more about those changes, that the difference in maybe the performances and like overall structure?
Sure. So the circus has really grown in its 96-year history. As I mentioned before, it started off with 22 men, and we have 156 students. We are open to faculty and staff members as well. We currently have 1 staff member who is an active member of Gamma Phi, and then we also have a couple of faculty members who help out and are members at large, honorary members with us. But we have developed a lot even in the time I've been here for 6 years, even in the time I've been here. And I went to school here as well, so I saw Gamma Phi back in 2000. I went to school in 2008, 2009 here. And I would say the size and the scale of the circus has really developed over the last 15 years. It has become more of a professional level production with themes, with high level costuming, with professional level lighting. And so it's really something that when people come and see it for the first time, they leave in awe.
Yeah, definitely. And then kind of also still looking back at the history of it, what challenges has the circus faced over the years, and how did they overcome them?
Oh, well, it's funny because the 2 biggest challenges I really think of was, you know, when we've had to shut down. So Gamma Phi had to shut down operations during World War II for 4 okay. years. And then they did come back. They didn't have enough men on campus to have an organization, but they continued doing physical education. Like, they had a physical education club and things that they did for the student body during that hiatus. And then, of course, with COVID, that was the first time we ever had to cancel a show since World War II. So that was a huge, huge challenge for us. And then the next year, what we did was we did not want to have to cancel a second year. And we didn't want to have to tell our students, like, oh, you don't get to perform again. So we figured out, it was very hard, but we figured it out, a way to work within COVID mitigation and all of the restrictions and produce a virtual circus. So we were able to stream our show. But I would say also, like, the biggest challenge that we are facing currently is our size. So it is a wonderful thing that we're growing so much, but we have so many students that it is, we are outgrowing our space and all of that. It's a good problem to have.
The shows took place on Friday and Saturday with a carnival before the Saturday matinee.
Private First Class Robert Bryant was a World War II veteran and Bloomington resident who was declared missing in action over 80 years ago in Italy. Now, the Department of Defense has found his remains, and they will finally be returned to his family. I spoke to Dave Skinner and Wayne Kirkpatrick, both veterans and themselves members of Rolling Thunder, about the significance of events like this one. So first of all, could y'all tell me about Rolling Thunder? What is it that your organization does?
Mission's pretty simple. And the mission is to educate the public that we have over 80,000 missing U.S. servicemen and women throughout the world. That's a significant number when you compare that to stadium capacity, small cities, tremendously shocking number. So number one is to educate the public. Hand in hand with that, you could say 1A or 2 is to keep the pressure on our government to keep up efforts to account for our MIAs through negotiations with other countries for access to MIA sites and to keep them being our government, active in identifying and accounting for our loss. And then a third mission, although big, and it's not third by importance, is to support our veteran issues where we can and assist them without interfering with other veteran organizations. And to make sure if any of our veterans have been captured, our government is taking good care of them. So that's sort of a nutshell, and it's maybe 99.9% accurate. But Dave, do you have anything to add to that?
I'd just like to mention Rolling Thunder is a national veterans organization. We have 90-plus chapters throughout the United States. And our primary mission through all of our chapters is raising the awareness of the POW-MIA issue, bringing all of our unaccounted-for soldiers home in honorably and timely fashion.
Lovely. What is the significance of returning MIAs like this? Why does it matter so much that people come back, that Bryant is coming back, that kind of thing?
Well, you opened up a bag of worms there. I think, in all honesty and being very candid, we as a nation and as a society are very quick to send our young men and women off to war in various places to defend democracy. We have to be equally as dedicated and as fast to account for them and bring them home, particularly those that have been missing in action. We have to keep the same sense of urgency in bringing them home that we had in deploying them to begin with. And it's not we have to, it's a moral obligation as Americans.
Yeah, and I'll add to that too, is that we have literally over 80,000 service members that have signed that blank check, which is due payable up to and including my life in order to protect this country. Now, when you think about having 80,000 of our service members that have been killed abroad and not have been returned home, if you look at the size of Bloomington Normal, 80,000 of those people, when you walk down the street, just imagine every person that you see walking down the street or driving their car is a POW or MIA that is missing. That is a huge, significant amount of people that, you know, have not returned home from serving their duty. When we return these soldiers home with these repatriations, whether it's from World War I, or a Korean conflict, or Vietnam, it gives a great sense of closure and purpose to the remaining family members who have been missing their loved ones for all of these years. In the case of POC Bryant, it's been 81 years that he has been missing since he was killed in action in Italy in 1943. Their family has had that hole in their hearts all of these years, for 81 years, up until their current generations. So bringing a family member home is not only a duty for us as American citizens, but we are also doing a great healing service for the families of these missing soldiers.
So can I ask, how often do y'all see success stories like this? Obviously, there's still plenty of work to be done, but...
In Illinois, this is the 23rd MIA we've assisted in bringing back. Now, you've got to understand, Joey, some of these MIAs and the families, I got to back out of that. You take that 80,000 as a background. Multiply that by five generations or more. Now you see the significance and the impact. Dave mentioned the citizens lying the highway as we brought POC Bryant remains back. Well, multiply the 80,000 by five generations, and you've got one heck of a number of Americans that are affected by the loss of a loved one and are currently MIA. And I think the other significant issue is missing in action transcends racial issues, social issues, political issues. Everybody is affected by that. And the commonality is, hey, we lost a loved one. Now, the other thing that adds to that is that we see every time we go into a town is escorting someone like PFC Bryant back gives the population an opportunity to show their patriotism. And by that I mean they can come out of their house, they see the hearse coming by, the American flag, the national anthem blaring, and they're proud to be Americans. They're proud to stand there and hold their hand over their heart, wave that flag. And these events not only help the family resolve issues and bring their loved one home, but it provides a service to the community to allow them to show their patriotism. And I think that's certainly a side effect of what we do.
Bryant was buried with full military honors on April 12th at Park Hill Cemetery.
We are going to take a quick break, but we've got some great stories you don't want to miss. Keep listening to Second Look right here on 103.3 WZND.
You're listening to Second Look only on WZND.
Welcome back to Second Look on WZND. In case you missed it so far, we've talked about the Gamma Phi Circus and the recent return of PFC Robert Bryant. Illinois Wesleyan University is set to hold their first ever Festival of the Arts later this month. The goal of the festival is to celebrate the fine arts and the alumni who contribute to them, as well as to promote student artists still attending the school. Dean of Fine Arts Joseph Klein expressed excitement for the festival, as well as hope that it could become an annual event. The Illinois State Board of Education has publicly denied the Trump administration's request to cut all diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. The administration has threatened that federal funding will be withheld from any states that refuse to comply, though Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson has said that they will be suing if that threat is followed through on.
The Trump administration has revoked the visas of several international students across Illinois, including ISU and UIUC. The action is part of the administration's larger goals of limiting immigration and specifically targeting students who have voiced disagreement to U.S. foreign policy. The universities themselves are facing criticism for refusing to disclose the number of students losing visas. On Monday morning, the ISU Athletic Department gathered at the Redbird Remembrance Memorial for the 10-year anniversary of the tragic plane crash, which killed seven. Families of the fallen, Bloomington and Normal mayors, and players of all ISU athletics gathered together to show their respect. On Tuesday afternoon, conservative activist Charlie Clark visited the campus of ISU for his Turning Point USA tour. Kirk debated against ISU students about climbing societal issues. On the other hand, students with opposing views protested Kirk with loud chants. After visiting ISU, Kirk visited the campus of U of I to continue his tour. Switching over to softball, the team took down a Big Ten foe, the University of Iowa, in extra innings 2-1. Julia Larson played hero for the Redbirds with an RBI single in the top of the 10th inning for the go-ahead run. Freshman Gracelyn Kemp had herself a day in the circle, tossing seven scoreless innings and striking out three. The Redbirds are currently in Indiana, battling the Valparaiso Beacons.
The baseball team won in their midweek battle with the University of Illinois, 14-4 on Tuesday. The Redbirds piled up 19 hits and 5 doubles to take down the Illini. Daniel Pacella's bat stayed hot as he went 4-for-5 from the plate with a pair of doubles and 4 RBIs. Conklin McCallan earned his second win of the season after coming in for relief and striking out 2. The Redbirds will be back on the diamond against Evansville.
Bloomington has always felt the need for hockey, seeing that it was the one sport the city did not have. Then in the fall, the Bloomington Bison came to town to play in the East Coast Hockey League as an affiliate of the New York Rangers. Now finishing its inaugural season, the team finished with a record of 30-34, placing 11th in the conference. With the Bison unable to make a playoff run, their first season is in the books. WZND's Nicholas Thompson spoke to Bloomington Director for Arts and Entertainment, Anthony Nelson, on the impact the fans have brought to the team.
Okay, so the first question I have for you is, what impact has the Bisons had on the community so far?
Yeah, obviously we won't have all the final data here for a little while as far as like economic impact and things like that, but you know, anecdotally, the downtown businesses and then us at the arena having an anchor tenant down here has done wonders for traffic before and after games downtown, for people going out to eat, and then hotel revenue as well. They, you know, the opposing team stays in a hotel, and a lot of these ECHL teams travel really, really well. So, you know, with Toledo, Indy, Fort Wayne, Kalamazoo, Iowa, when they've come to town, they've had pretty nice following that stays here all weekend and stays in our hotels and eats in our restaurants and buys gas here. So, you know, we're projecting that kind of that overall economic impact of the team is going to be well over, you know, probably $5 or $6 million when it's all said and done.
So then, like, with the spending, has they had an impact, like, on community with, like, schools or anything like that?
Yeah, especially towards the end of the season here, the Bison did, you know, they kind of put their money where their mouth is. They said they were going to go out into the community and really be a community first organization and ingrain themselves, and they did that. They had players and staff members, I think, almost at every elementary school in town, either reading or playing floor hockey or different things at the schools, and I think that goes a long way, not only in the short term, but the long term as well, because those kids who were like, hey, I played hockey with, you know, Eddie Matsushima today, you know, and then they're going to want to come to one game next year, but then they kind of fall in love with it and want to go to two or three games the next year. But it's those kind of those little things of really making yourself part of the community that they've done a really, really good job of.
Great, great, great. And another question I have for you, is there like any potential, like, so we had the Bisons, do you have anything else planned to have a new team come to the city?
You know, I think down the road, there can definitely be some conversations about more teams. You know, I don't know that, you know, we used to have a pro basketball team here. I don't think that ever makes sense again. And, you know, maybe things change down the road, but even the G League doesn't draw that well. And when we have, I think, superior product down the street with Illinois State men's basketball, and we have Division I men's women's basketball, and then two really good Division III teams, I just don't know that there's a need to play like semi-pro basketball. I think people can watch, if not better, just as good basketball during the college season. So I just don't think it makes sense. But, you know, football is definitely something that, you know, could happen again. And even indoor soccer is starting to grow in popularity. We fielded a few calls there, but I would think that, you know, in 2 or 3 years, I wouldn't be shocked if there's another pro tenant.
Nice. And then another question I have for you, have any new business opened up so far since the Bison's first season is almost coming to an end in the community?
I don't know about new business besides for their office. So right across the street here on Washington, they've rented 2 floors over there where their staff is. They have a small merchandise shop, their ticket office downstairs, and then their front office is upstairs. So, you know, there's 20, 25 people right there. So, I mean, on top of the players themselves, but a lot of the downtown bars and restaurants, I think some of them were struggling, you know, after COVID, and I think it's helped them stay open, and they've hosted watch parties, and I know they've kind of had season ticket holders have kind of found their spot to have a drink or dinner before or after a game. So I think it's done a lot for the downtown businesses.
Nice. So you did say that the first season has boosted the inner city spending?
Correct, yeah. It's had a big boost to downtown. Having 36 home games, most of them on the weekends, it brings a lot of people downtown, and they usually don't just park and go to the game. They're usually getting something to eat before or after the game. You know, just out my window, I can see Shake It Up Grill, and I've seen a lot of people line up or come out of there before a game and then go there after a game to get a drink. And I know McGuire's and Elroy's and Brass Pig and Luca and all them have said that, you know, on a game day, it's noticeably busier in their establishments.
Mm-hmm. Then the last question I have for you, how do you think the fans have reacted? Like, do you think they're, like, they're engaged into the Bisons?
Yeah, I mean, their retention rate, so if they can get somebody to come to a game once, almost, I mean, their retention rate was something ridiculous. I think it was over, like, 65%. They got them to come back to a second game. So I think Wow. Once people gave it a shot, they were coming back and watching two games. So, like, I'll give my son as an example. You know, we've gone to hockey games before. I'm a hockey fan, but he was very lukewarm about it when, you know, we went to games. And he came this year and went to a couple of games. And then just the amount of in-game entertainment they provide, plus the hockey, it's kind of made him not only fall in love with the team, but the sport as well. And he's always, hey, Dad, can we go tonight? And he's even started watching, like, NHL on TV and following in that sport more. So I think it's really got him hooked, just the quality of product they put on the ice, but also the entertainment they provide during the game helps that, maybe that fan who's not maybe the biggest hockey fan, it really wants them to come back, because you get this first-class entertainment. And it's not just, I mean, the hockey's really good, but they do a great job of entertaining the crowd as well.
With a variety of theme nights and other deals on game day, the Bloomington Bison have created a welcoming environment for their first season.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Second Look. Today we talked about the GammaFi Circus, the return of PFC Robert Bryant, and caught up with the Bloomington Bison. For Second Look, I'm Joey Delahunty.
And I'm Jaden Cohn, and you can listen to this episode or any of our previous ones on WZND.com. Have a great week, everyone, and we will see you next week.
This has been WZND's Second Look. Catch more WZND in-depth news every Sunday at noon with WZND's Bird's Eye View and Second Look. For more WZND news, find us online at WZND.com.